The Two Towers, Cassette 2.
With that they parted. Very swift were the horses of Rohan. When after a little Gimli looked back, the company of Eomer were already small and far away. Aragorn did not look back. He was watching the trail as they sped on their way, bending low with his head beside the neck of Harsifel. Before long they came to the borders of the Entwash, and there they met the other trail of which Eomer spoke, coming down from the east out of the wold. Aragorn dismounted and surveyed the ground. Then, leaping back into the saddle, he rode away for some distance eastward, keeping to one side and taking care not to override the footprints. Then he again dismounted and examined the ground, going backwards and forwards on foot. "There's little to discover," he said when he returned. "The main trail is all confused with the passage of the horsemen as they came back. Their outward course must have lain nearer the river, but this eastward trail is fresh and clear. There's no sign there of any feet going the other way, back towards Anduin. Now we must ride slower, and make sure that no trace or footstep branches off on either side." The orcs must have been aware from this point that they were pursued. They may have made some attempt to get their captives away before they were overtaken. As they rode forward, the day was overcast. Low grey clouds came over the wold. A mist shrouded the sun. Ever nearer, the tree-clad slopes of Fangorn loomed, slowly darkling as the sun went west. They saw no sign of any trail to right or left, but here and there they passed single orcs, fallen in their tracks as they ran, with grey feathered arrows sticking in back or throat. At last, as the afternoon was waning, they came to the eaves of the forest, and in an open glade among the first trees they found the place of the great burning. The ashes were still hot and smoking. Beside it was a great pile of helms and mail, cloven shields and broken swords, bows and darts and other gear of war. Upon a stake in the middle was set a great goblin head. Upon its shattered helm the white badge could still be seen. Further away, not far from the river, where it came streaming out from the edge of the wood, there was a mound. It was newly raised. The raw earth was covered with fresh-cut turves. About it were planted 15 spears. Aragorn and his companions searched far and wide about the field of battle, but the light faded, and evening soon grew down, dim and misty. By nightfall they had discovered no trace of Merry and Pippin.
"We can do no more," said Gimli sadly. "We've been set many riddles since we came to Tol Brandir, but this is the hardest to unravel. I would guess that the burned bones of the hobbits are now mingled with the orcs. It'll be hard news for Frodo, if he lives to hear it, and hard, too, for the old hobbit who waits in Rivendell. Elrond was against their coming."
"But Gandalf was not," said Legolas.
"But Gandalf chose to come himself, and he was the first to be lost," answered Gimli. "His foresight failed him."
"The counsel of Gandalf was not founded on foreknowledge of safety for himself or for others," said Aragorn. "There are some things that it's better to begin than to refuse, even though the end may be dark. But I shall not depart from this place yet. In any case, we must here await the morning light." A little way beyond the battlefield, they made their camp under a spreading tree. It looked like a chestnut, and yet it still bore many broad brown leaves of a former year, like dry hands with long splayed fingers. They rattled mournfully in the night breeze. Gimli shivered. They had brought only one blanket apiece.
"Let's light a fire," he said. "I care no longer for the danger. Let the orcs come as thick as summer moths round a candle."
"If those unhappy hobbits are astray in the woods, it might draw them hither," said Legolas.
"And it might draw other things, neither orc nor hobbit," said Aragorn. "We're near to the mountain marches of the traitor Saruman, and also we're on the very edge of Fangorn, and it's perilous to touch the trees of that wood, it is said.
But the Rohirrim made a great burning here yesterday, said Gimli, and they felled trees for the fire, as can be seen. Yet they passed the night away safely here, when their labour was ended.
There were many, said Aragorn, and they don't heed the wrath of Fangorn, for they come here seldom, and they don't go under the trees. But our paths are likely to lead us into the very forest itself, so have a care. Cut no living wood.
There's no need, said Gimli. The riders have left chip and bough enough, and there's dead wood lying in plenty.
He went off to gather fuel, and busied himself with building and kindling a fire, but Aragorn sat silently with his back to the great tree, deep in thought, and Legolas stood alone in the open, looking towards the profound shadow of the wood, leaning forward, as one who listens to voices calling from a distance. When the dwarf had a small, bright blaze going, the three companions drew close to it and sat together, shrouding the light with their hooded forms. Legolas looked up at the boughs of the tree reaching out above them. Look, he said, the tree is glad of the fire. It may have been that the dancing shadows tricked their eyes, but certainly to each of the companions the boughs appeared to be bending this way and that, so as to come above the flames, while the upper branches were stooping down. The brown leaves now stood out stiff, and rubbed together like many cold, cracked hands taking comfort in the warmth. There was a silence, for suddenly the dark and unknown forest, so near at hand, made itself felt as a great brooding presence, full of secret purpose. After a while, Legolas spoke again. Caraborn warned us not to go far into Fangorn, he said. Do you know why, Aragorn? What are the fables of the forest that Boromir had heard?
I've heard many tales in Gondor and elsewhere, said Aragorn. But if it weren't for the words of Celeborn, I should deem them only fables that men have made as true knowledge fades. I thought of asking you what was the truth of the matter, and if an elf of the wood doesn't know, how shall a man answer?
You've journeyed further than I, said Legolas. I've heard nothing of this in my own land, save only songs that tell how the Onodrim, the men called Ents, dwelt there long ago. But Fangorn is old, old even as the elves would reckon it.
Yes, it's old, said Aragorn, as old as the forest by the Barrow Downs, and it's far greater.
Elrond says that the two are akin, the last strongholds of the mighty woods of the elder days, in which the firstborn roamed while men still slept. But Fangorn holds some secret of its own. What it is, I don't know.
I don't wish to know, said Gimli. Let nothing that dwells in Fangorn be troubled on my account.
They now drew lots for the watchers, and the lot for the first watch fell to Gimli. The others lay down. Almost at once, sleep laid hold on them.
Gimli, said Aragorn drowsily, remember, it's perilous to cut bough or twig from a living tree in Fangorn, but don't stray far in search of dead wood. Let the fire die, rather. Call me at need.
With that he fell asleep. Legolas already lay motionless, his fair hands folded upon his breast, his eyes unclosed, blending living night and deep dream, as is the way with elves. Gimli sat hunched by the fire, running his thumb thoughtfully along the edge of his axe. The tree rustled. There was no other sound. Suddenly Gimli looked up, and there, just on the edge of the firelight, stood an old bent man, leaning on a staff, and wrapped in a great cloak. His wide-brimmed hat was pulled down over his eyes. Gimli sprang up, too amazed for the moment to cry out, though at once the thought flashed into his mind that Saruman had caught them. Both Aragorn and Legolas, aroused by his sudden movement, sat up and stared. The old man didn't speak or make a sign.
"Well, father, what can we do for you?" said Aragorn, leaping to his feet. "Come and be warm if you're cold."
He strode forward, but the old man was gone. There was no trace of him to be found near at hand,
and they didn't dare to wander far. The moon had set, and the night was very dark. Suddenly Legolas gave a cry. "The horses! The horses!" The horses were gone. They dragged their pickets and disappeared. For some time the three companions stood still and silent, troubled by this new stroke of ill fortune. They were under the eaves of Fangorn, and endless leagues lay between them and the men of Rohan, their only friends in this wide and dangerous land. As they stood, it seemed to them that they heard, far off in the night, the sound of horses whinnying and neighing. Then all was quiet again, except for the cold rustle of the wind. "Well, they're gone," said Aragorn at last. "We can't find them or catch them. So that if they don't return of their own free will, we must do without. We started on our own feet, and we have those still."
"Feet," said Gimli. "But we can't eat them as well as walk on them."
He threw some fuel on the fire and slumped down beside it. "Only a few hours ago you were unwilling to sit on a horse of Rohan," laughed Legolas. "But you'll make a rider yet."
"It seems unlikely that I shall have the chance," said Gimli. "If you wish to know what I think," he began again after a while, "I think it was Saruman. Who else? Remember the words of Éomer. He walks about like an old man hooded and cloaked. Those were the words. He's gone off with our horses, or scared them away, and here we are. There's more trouble coming to us, mark my words."
"I mark them," said Aragorn. "But I marked also that this old man had a hat, not a hood. Still, I don't doubt that you guess right, and that we're in peril here, by night or day. Yet in the meantime, there is nothing that we can do but rest, while we may. I'll watch for a while now, Gimli. I've more need of thought than of sleep." The night passed slowly. Legolas followed Aragorn, and Gimli followed Legolas, and their watches wore away. But nothing happened. The old man didn't appear again, and the horses did not return. Chapter 3.
The Uruk-hai.
Pippin lay in a dark and troubled dream. It seemed that he could hear his own small voice echoing in black tunnels, calling Frodo, Frodo. But instead of Frodo, hundreds of hideous orc faces grinned at him out of the shadows. Hundreds of hideous arms grasped at him from every side. Where was Merry? He woke. Cold air blew on his face. He was lying on his back. Evening was coming, and the sky above was growing dim. He turned and found that the dream was little worse than the waking. His wrists, legs, and ankles were tied with cords. Beside him Merry lay, white-faced, with a dirty rag bound across his brows. All about them sat or stood a great company of orcs. Slowly in Pippin's aching head, memory pieced itself together and became separated from dream shadows. Of course, he and Merry had run off into the woods. What had come over them? Why had they dashed off like that, taking no notice of old Strider? They'd run a long way, shouting. He couldn't remember how far or how long, and then suddenly they'd crashed right into a group of orcs. They were standing listening, and they didn't appear to see Merry and Pippin until they were almost in their arms. Then they yelled, and dozens of other goblins had sprung out of the trees. Merry and he had drawn their swords, but the orcs didn't wish to fight, and had tried only to lay hold of them, even when Merry had cut off several of their arms and hands. Good old Merry! Then Boromir had come leaping through the trees. He had made them fight. He slew many of them, and the rest fled. But they hadn't gone far on the way back when they were attacked again by 100 orcs at least, some of them very large, and they shot a rain of arrows, always at Boromir. Boromir had blown his great horn till the woods rang, and at first the orcs had been dismayed and had drawn back. But when no answer but the echoes came, they'd attacked more fiercely than ever. Pippin didn't remember much more. His last memory was of Boromir leaning against a tree, plucking out an arrow. Then darkness fell suddenly. "I suppose I was knocked on the head," he said to himself. "I wonder if poor Mary is much hurt. What has happened to Boromir? Why didn't the orcs kill us? Where are we? And where are we going?"
He couldn't answer the questions. He felt cold and sick. "I wish Gandalf had never persuaded Elrond to let us come," he thought. "What good have I been? Just a nuisance, a passenger, a piece of luggage. And now I've been stolen, and I'm just a piece of luggage for the orcs. I hope Strider or someone will come and claim us. But ought I to hope for it? Won't that throw out all the plans? I wish I could get free." He struggled a little, quite uselessly. One of the orcs sitting near laughed and said something to a companion in their abominable tongue.
"Rest while you can, little fool," he said then to Pippin, in the common speech, which he made almost as hideous as his own language. "Rest while you can. We'll find a use for your legs before long. You'll wish you'd got none before we get home."
"If I had my way, you'd wish you were dead now," said the other. "I'll make you squeak, you miserable rat."
He stooped over Pippin, bringing his yellow fangs close to his face. He had a black knife with a long, jagged blade in his hand.
"Lie quiet, or I'll tickle you with this," he hissed. "Don't draw attention to yourself, or I may forget my orders. Curse the Isengarders.
Ugluk a bagrong sha push dug saramung globuko sky."
He passed into a long, angry speech in his own tongue that slowly died away into muttering and snarling. Terrified, Pippin lay still, though the pain at his wrists and ankles was growing, and the stones beneath him were boring into his back. To take his mind off himself, he listened intently to all that he could hear. There were many voices round him, and though orc speech sounded at all times full of hate and anger, it seemed plain that something like a quarrel had begun and was getting hotter. To Pippin's surprise, he found that much of the talk was intelligible. Many of the orcs were using ordinary language. Apparently the members of two or three quite different tribes were present, and they couldn't understand one another's orc speech. There was an angry debate concerning what they were to do now, which way they were to take, and what should be done with the prisoners.
"There's no time to kill them properly," said one. "No time for play on this trip."
"That can't be helped," said another. "But why not kill them quick? Kill them now. They're a cursed nuisance, and we're in a hurry. Evening's coming on, and we ought to get a move on."
"Orders," said a third voice in a deep growl. "Kill all but not the halflings. They're to be brought back alive as quickly as possible. That's my orders."
"What are they wanted for?"
asked several voices. "Why alive? Do they give sport?"
"No, I heard that one of them has got something, something that's wanted for the war, some elvish plot or other. Anyway, they'll both be questioned."
"Is that all you know? Why don't we search them and find out? We might find something that we could use ourselves."
"That is a very interesting remark," sneered a voice, softer than the others but more evil. "I may have to report that. The prisoners are not to be searched or plundered. Those are my orders."
"And mine too," said the deep voice. "Alive and as captured. No spoiling. That's my orders."
"Not our orders," said one of the earlier voices. "We've come all the way from the mines to kill and avenge our folk. I wish to kill and then go back north."
"And you can wish again," said the growling voice. "I am Ugluk. I command. I return to Isengard by the shortest road."
"Is Saruman the master of the Great Eye?" said the evil voice. "We should go back at once to Lugbor's."
"If we could cross the Great River, we might," said another voice. But there aren't enough of us to venture down to the bridges.
I came across, said the evil voice. A winged Nazgul awaits us northward on the east bank.
Maybe, maybe. Then you'll fly off with our prisoners and get all the pay and praise in Lugbors and leave us to foot it as best we can through the horse country. No, we must stick together. These lands are dangerous, full of foul rebels and brigands.
Aye, we must stick together, growled Ugluk. I don't trust you, little swine. You've no guts outside your own styes. But for us, you'd all have run away. We are fighting Uruk-hai. We slew the great warrior. We took the prisoners. We are the servants of Saruman the Wise, the White Hand, the hand that gives us men's flesh to eat. We came out of Isengard and led you here, and we shall lead you back by the way we choose. I am Ugluk. I have spoken.
You have spoken more than enough, Ugluk, sneered the evil voice. I wonder how they would like it in Lugbors. They might think that Ugluk's shoulders needed relieving of a swollen head. They might ask where his strange ideas came from. Did they come from Saruman, perhaps?